This is the fifth day of this June 2000, Sesshin. And we resume working on the Paramitas. And yesterday we saw the third and fourth. They will see the fifth and sixth, and and Master Hui Hai he says, a student asks him what are the three methods of training to be performed at the same level and what it means by performing them at the same level. There are discipline, Vinaya, which we saw yesterday, concentration, Dhyana, which is the fifth one. It's the fifth Prajna Paramita, Paramita, and wisdom, which is Prajna. Which is a six. And the questioner, please explain one by one, of course. Discipline involves stainless purity. That's an interesting way of putting it. Discipline. Stainless purity. Concentration involves the stilling of your minds so that you remain wholly unmoved by surrounding phenomena. Wisdom means that your stillness of mind is not disturbed by your giving any thoughts to that stillness. That your purity is unmarred, it's not stained, by your entertaining any thoughts of purity, and that in the midst of all such points of opposites as good and evil, you are able to distinguish between them without being stained by them. Furthermore, if you realize that discipline, concentration, and wisdom are all alike, in that their substance is intangible, they're all alike. And that, hence, they are undivided, and therefore, one that is one, that is what is meant by the three methods of training performed at the same level. So, he equates them as being one, or almost the same. And in all the books, authors, some have difficulty to separate them. The Eikin Roshi is the only one that very clearly states that they must be separated, that they are different things. Not only that, that dhyana is confused with samadhi. It's used almost like with the same meaning. And they're not. One is a state of mind, and the other one is how you get there. And prajna is the result of using dhyana to get to a deep state of samadhi and then realizing the non-duality of nature, of reality, of everything, including ourselves. Understanding our true nature. So dhyana is how we do it. And prajna literally means transcendental wisdom. Pra means transcendental, and na, or with the J first, is na, wisdom. So prajna is transcendental wisdom. And dhyana, in that sense, is the teaching. Because teachers, especially in Zen, they don't talk much about prajna. According to Eiken Roshi, I didn't count them, I didn't go over them, but he says that from 1700 koans we go through, just one of them mentions the word prajna. And that's because it's difficult to speak about prajna, because all you say are descriptions of it. And the descriptions just see one point of view. You say it's this, it's that, it's coming from here, it's coming from there, and it's like trying to describe a whole or trying to describe zero. You can't. The absence of something that at the same time is something. Or is it? So, most of the efforts have gone into dhyana, on the how we achieve it. Prajna is always an invitation. Ah, if you only achieved prajna, wow, you'd be somewhere else. Well, I'm exaggerating, but that's what happens. It's this big carrot. Attaining enlightenment. Once you have it, you really don't know what you have. You can see the results. You can see how it affects you. You can simply do things or understand things that you didn't understand before. And you kind of change. Of course, that depends on the depth of your awakening. It is most unusual to have a maha, huge, enormous, life-transforming, shattering experience as your first awakening. It's probably certain that the Buddha himself had a number of awakenings before he got to his great enlightenment. Wisdom is a process as well in that sense, in that we build upon previous experiences of emptiness. So many times we're concerned, or our ego is concerned, and sometimes ourselves, what am I going to do with this huge experience that's transforming my life and turning it upside down? What am I going to do if I'm dangling from my feet, seeing the world differently? Well, usually not the case. Yes, the first experience has a transforming power to it that changes you. But that doesn't mean you're going to drop your job or abandon your family or sell everything and go hide in a cave. Maybe for someone it would. But prajna requires that we let go ourselves. We need to let go the control we have over everything that happens to us. Because control means that we know what's going to happen. And here we need to let ourselves be uncertain. And there must be ambiguity. And in Sesshin, as the energy builds up, we feel the energy coming up and gives us this sense of certainty. We know exactly what we want to do. Sometimes it's difficult to be in a state of not knowing, because the clarity of mind gives you such a clear sense of direction. But you don't know where you're going, so how do you handle that? Ambiguity. Does it have Buddha nature? Yes. No. So how do I work? What do I do there? I go to the yes, I go to the no. And you have all this energy and clarity of mind. You know where you're going? Yes. That's why the sense of direction must be put into and the clarity of mind must be put into the questioning or the wonder. Which I prefer as a word. It's more encompassing, more mysterious, more opened. But we need to put this energy, we need energy to change our mind from going towards the outside, to going to the inside, and then to let go. It's like jumping into a pool from the highest trampoline. It takes a lot of energy just to jump. Or even if it's a low one, you've never done it. 3 feet high, 5 feet high. It's not that high, and yet when you're up there, it looks very high. And it takes a lot of determination and energy to say, okay, one, two, it's too high. No. Okay, one, two, 2.5. It just takes, so that's where the clarity, the sense of direction is jump off. Let go your hands of the cliff. Let go your hands. Open your hands. Just open them. That's easy. Not necessarily. And so it takes all that energy just to open your hands, your determination, your sense of direction is open your hands. Let go your hold of the cliff. Let yourself fall. Jump from the trampoline. Nothing will happen. You get close, you back off. You get close, you back off. You get close, you back off. And that happens myriad of times in our practice until we finally jump. Now I'm talking about dhyana here. Notice it? Talking about the process, how we do it. Not about prajna. How do we get to prajna? That's dhyana. That's the focusing. That's the questioning. The jumping, that's dhyana. How we do it. And that's why in Dzogchen, what we work is in dhyana. We demonstrate prajna. That's why we demonstrate. We don't explain prajna. Demonstrate it. But we explain dhyana. Dhyana can be explained. Because it's a technique of how to do it. Not necessarily how it does it or what it does. But we do know how to do it. And that's what Dzogchen is about. And teachers about, and encouragement talks, and sasen, mainly sasen, what you're doing right now with your legs crossed, and etc., etc., etc. In Dzogchen, talk a little bit about Dzogchen. we treat what comes up as obstructions to your practice. Oh, I can't because whatever. We treat that as an obstruction. And how to help you get rid of that obstruction so you can go deeper. But we're really not interested in the content of your obstruction. For several years, one of my students, and a member for 5 or 6 years, would always come and tell me how he felt. He said, "Don't tell me how you feel. It's not significant for your practice." He says, "How am I going to tell you how I am if I don't tell you how I feel?" And I wasn't able to get him to see that feeling is not important in the sense that feelings are a different universe from our true nature. It's the obstructions usually are emotional. Or because they come from past lives, you believe in past lives and karma, or because you don't let yourself go, or because you are worried because you haven't eaten, or you have eaten too much, or because whatever keeps you interested, makyos, for instance, these great friends we have to distract us. But, I mean, it's interesting to listen to certain makyos. I mean, they're fascinating. But, and the variety is also fascinating. It's really amazing, the amount of, and the diversity of them. But, getting to the, it's not going to help you. I mean, we might be interested in ourselves, and the teacher might be interested in, oh, what an interesting makyo. But it doesn't help. To get into the content, what we want to get rid of is of the obstruction that is not allowing you to keep going. Because dhyana is about process, not content. And that's difficult. It is difficult for us to be there and really not know what to ask or what to say. What do I do with this? Do I just keep quiet? Do I just... Because you've probably heard as much as you can hear or need to hear. And yet, you're not getting it. And yet you still haven't gotten to prajna or a deep samadhi state. So we have to work with obstructions as a process. Because process is like walking. Take one step, another step, another step. You can go, you might be going to the kitchen to get a glass of water, You might be going to the movies, you might be going to work, you're still walking. Doesn't depend. Walking doesn't depend on where you're going. And you might be in a hurry and then walk fast, or you're happy and jumping and doing something else. That's content, but not process. Process is just the walking, just the practice. If we could only do the process without having to deal with content, we'd all be fully enlightened. But our minds, our cells are made in such a way that we need to learn to drop what's in the way. We need to learn to drop everything. You can see this thing about process and content as well. Is certain tendencies in therapy are process oriented, like PNL and EFT and all the systemic therapies that work with systems theory and family therapy and couple therapy, all that systemic. And in content you have psychoanalysis basically, which deals with basically content, or dream therapy, or others. Now, to some people, Dzogchen has spoken about compassion, to put a drop of compassion into their practice. And it's been somewhat confusing because we think compassion, or usually we think compassion is some kind of feeling. And how do we get a feeling into our practice if we're saying get rid of feelings? It involves emotions. Compassion involves emotions. And not compassion necessarily can cause emotions, but it's not an emotional state. Passion literally means to feel the passion of the other person. It's not your passion, it's the other person, but you can identify with it. It's not the best word in that sense, not the original sense of compassion in our practice in Buddhism. But what I mean by put a drop of compassion into your practice is to make it softer, more gentle with yourself. We have lots of energy. And we know a sense of direction, and it comes out sometimes in a harsh manner. And it's helpful if we learn to use our energy in a gentle way for ourselves. I've seen a lot of people just banging themselves. They've got the energy, they don't know how to put it into their practice, and then they bring it back to themselves and use it harshly. That's what I mean by put compassion. Give it that sense of direction with gentleness and with self-destructive energy towards yourself. It is compassion, it's also a technique in that sense. And since I have certain problems with in the office and everyday life, in which my energy comes out directly. And taking, this morning, when I talked about putting attention on how you walk, just came right through. Come on! And many interpret my energy as anger. As they say, I'm barking orders. The samurai part that comes out, which is, it seems that I'm angry and. Oops. The microphone amplified that. And it's not that. It's just the clarity that's so obvious, and the energy just comes out and. It comes out as a bunch of energy, and some people just hear it as anger. So we're not accustomed in our societies to express energy. Sometimes dogs in room, a person comes in full of energy. Suddenly immediately settles down. Puts a big smile or does something that just hides the energy. No. I'm fine. As if bringing all this vitality and energy into dogs, and what's wrong? It's not. Bring it. That's what I want. I deal with that. That's what we need, of this power, this energy. Just grum. Get to the practice. And energy usually comes out as direct, clear, with a precise sense of direction we want to go. Now, prajna is transmitted from mind to mind, as traditionally said, outside the scriptures. From mind to mind. And when that happens, in the Japanese text, they say we have an intimate relationship between the student and the teacher. Now, your intimate has a different connotation. We see with the same mind. We see with the same eyes. So, how are you going to transmit something from mind to mind when the other mind is full of thoughts? The mind has to be cleared first. And it's not something that I'm going to transmit. Okay, clear the radios, clear the signals, clear the air cup, okay, the hard disk ready, clear. It's not that. It's the student is ready to suddenly hear something. What is the turning word the mind is ripe. It can be a gesture, it can be the rain. How many cases have we heard of he urinated and the sound of his pee awakened him? Or he threw a stone and hit a bamboo and the sound awakened him. Or a bell. I had just read part of the Three Pillars, and in my first Shishina I was waiting for the bell to ring so I would become enlightened. Oh, it's not happened yet. Okay, next bell. Next bell. Oh, go to the bathroom. See if I could pee harder and louder. Yes, that's the problem with reading. You get into, oh, the sound. And one of the reasons, because sound goes directly to the mind. We see things. They go much more, they go immediately into the process. But sound doesn't. It's the power of music, chanting. Power of chanting is because it goes directly to the mind. You don't stop to process. You don't have time to process, and with the eyes you do. Because the visual mind is very fast, but the auditory mind is slow. So it's from mind to mind when the mind is ready. What's transmitted? I don't know what's transmitted. I don't have a clue. I just know something magic has happened. And by magic I mean beyond explanations. And notice I'm talking about process again. Talking about prajna. Not prajna, but dhyana. About zen. I'm talking about zen. Zen is process. Yesterday, when this non-Buddhist, we spoke about this non-Buddhist that sits in front of the Buddha and he becomes awakened. And he asks, no words. And not words. Buddha goes beyond words in his sitting. Goes beyond words and no words. Enable the non-Buddhist to awaken. In that sense, teachers are not psychotherapists. There's not psychotherapist, and one does not heal, though it can happen, and certainly happens that we heal emotions through our practice. It does happen, but it's not necessarily the case. That's why it's so confusing when a therapist is a teacher as well. Because a teacher might be confused between what is he doing, therapy or Zen. it's two different areas. Yes, they're very close. They overlap. Yes, they do. But they're not the same. It's confusing when a teacher asks a student, how do you feel about that? What the hell do you mind? Unless it's an obstruction. And you're working it at it as an obstruction. That must be made clear. And I just want to read you from case 19, Ordinary Mind is the Way. Something that's very clearly expressed in terms of how it works. Here's Joshua, young Joshua, 18, 19, old Joshua, Chow Cho. And he comes to the monastery and he's there for a few days and he finally comes up to Nansen, who's a teacher who must have been in his 40s by then. Great teacher. What is the way? Or what is Buddha? What's the meaning of Bodhidharma coming to the West? Standard question. What is the way? Nansen answers, ordinary mind is the way. What do you mean ordinary mind? Isn't there something special? Imagine Joshua, this extremely sensitive future teacher. You mean ordinary mind? The way I think, that's the way? Is that it? So Joshua asked, shall I try to seek after it? He says, no, it can't be ordinary mind because it must be something special. So shall I try to seek after it? And Nansen says, if you try to seek after it, you go away from it. If you try to seek after it, you go away from it. If you try to seek enlightenment, which is what he's asking, how do I get enlightened? Ordinary mind is the enlightenment. So how do I go after it? Well, if you go after it, it goes away. If I do not try for it, how can I know the way? How? What do I do? That's the question everybody has in this Zendo. If I do not try for it, how can I know the way? How can I find it? How can I awaken? Everybody's asking that. In this Zendo, how do I do it? Doesn't matter if you're working subsequent koans, first koan, or whatever you're working. It's the same as working with breathing. You want to follow the breath. The breath stops. If you start playing around with it, you're not following the breath. It's gone. Have to let just be. Let the breath be and just follow it. So here comes. Nansen answers. The way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Awakening. And here he goes into wisdom. into prajna. The way is not a matter, or prajna is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is illusion. Not knowing is blankness. How many of you have gotten to mind states? Okay, knowing is illusion, okay? So I won't know. And you get into this mind states where everything is the same, or it's kind of a all light, or everything is black, or everything is, God, no, I don't know what. But you get into this mind states of not knowing, it's blankness. You're going to dhyana, Zen. You must keep your attention on your practice at all times. Not knowing is not knowing the answer. Not being in a state of fogginess, nothing. Like if you're half asleep, half awake, that's not questioning. That's not working. That's just blankness. You have to keep your mind on the practice. Knowing is illusion. Come and say, oh, I know what it is. Mu is, that's illusion. Come and describe that illusion. Oh, I know what this. Yeah. Oh, yes, yes, the guy in the crystal palace. That's because the Buddha, they came. That's illusion. That's not enlightenment. That's why you have to demonstrate it. Because you have to be it. Not knowing is blankness. Don't get into those mindsets. If you're in it, get out of it as soon as you can or as fast as you can. That's not the practice. If you attain on this way of no doubt, it is boundless as fast pace. Here he describes again what prajna. Tries to describe, you attain to this way of no doubt. It is as boundless as vast space. So how can there be right or wrong in the way? You attend to this way of no doubt. So what's the questioning of? I do with the questioning if I have no doubts. That's one of the big questions. I have no doubt. I can't. This is massive doubt. What is that? I have no doubt mass. How can I get through if I have no doubt mass? We've all confronted this problem. We all have to generate somehow. Find our own way, because it depends on each person, really, how to do it. Each one has to find his own way of questioning. To get to this way of no doubt, it is as boundless as vast space. So how can there be right or wrong in the way? How can there be dualities? How can there be yes or no? How can there be black and white? How can there be doing it right and doing it wrong? How can it be wrong to seek it and right not to seek it? Where is the world going to? When and left is right and right is wrong. At these words, Joshua was suddenly enlightened. So they were able to see beyond the dualities of seeking and not seeking, of going after it and not going after it. So right through. Later in the commentary, Momon says, even though Joshua had come to realization, to our realization, he must delve into it for another 30 years before he can understand it fully. Yes, he had an initial awakening. He opened his eyes a tiny bit. And it took him 30 years to fully understand it. He actually spent 40 years with his teacher. 40-something years. Until Nansen died. Great team. Working together. Transmission from mind to mind. Don't you think Nansen yearned for Joshua to a deeper awakening? You can be sure of it. Then he want him, and then he say, Joshua, in his after each doksan, Joshua, come on, deeper, Joshua. Still on the same level. Come on, Joshua. Joshua didn't budge. He was stuck in his first awakening. And yet, he knew he had to go deeper. He knew there was more to it than just what he first realized. That's why it's so important to continue to work. Because the beauty of it is that's the beauty of practice. It never ends. So it's a deeper state of mind. So it's more than an initial breakthrough. Or 100th. Dogen spoke of 40-something major and 27 major and 43 minor awakenings. He's the only teacher that kept counting them. Yeah, he's been accused of exaggerating. Yet, he was a great teacher. He still is. He still resounds in these halls. Okay, we'll stop here. Have the four vows.